हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, page 85, song 4. O youthful son of the king of Braja, you are the lord of all lords. According to your will, creation and destruction take place in the universe. According to your will, Lord Brahma creates. And according to your will, Lord Vishnu maintains. According to your will, Lord Shiva destroys, and according to your will, Maya constructs the prison house of this world. According to your will, the living beings take birth and die, and according to your will, they meet with prosperity and ruin, happiness and sorrow. The tiny soul bound up by Maya vainly struggles in the fetters of worldly desire. Without your sanction, he is unable to do anything. You are my only protector and maintainer. Except for your lotus feet, there is no other hope for me. No longer confident of my own strength and endeavor, I have become solely dependent on your will. Bhaktivinoda is most poor and his pride has been leveled. Now in accordance with your will, he lives and dies. So how do you say? Acknowledging that everything is by the Lord's grace, there is no other way things go on. It means it's by the Lord's desire. It's not that he is simply desiring on his own, whimsically, right? He's not like some despot that sits there and just somehow or other has some feeling and then that should be done. It's purely reciprocal. It means how you surrender to him, how you interact with him, how you see him is how he responds with you. So it's not a matter of that this is okay, well, that's only for devotees and everybody else is different. No, that's how it is for every living entity. The point is, if you see him as God, then he will reciprocate that way. You don't see him as God, then you'll get, you know, he'll still act, but you won't understand that it's him. That's all. Yes.
So atheists, when they see that they can't see God, is that because they're expecting him to act whimsically? Like lifting up a table and throwing it around.
Something like that. Is that, you know, that proves it to you. Yeah. But the point is why is it that if I said, well, unless the prime minister comes right now here because I want to see him, I don't believe he exists. It's not going to work. You know, so if it's not going to work for, you know, somebody of this world, why will it work for beyond? So that all it is extreme false ego. That's all. And because they know that by saying that it's not going to happen, then that one, it makes them confident that therefore they can do whatever they want. But it's the point is that they're in control. I said you have to do this, you can't do it, that puts me in control. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like if you're playing a game and you say, okay, now you do this, and then they say, okay, you do that, right? Now, if you can say something that they can't do, that at least seemingly is possible, but they can't do, then that means you win. You understand? So I say, if God doesn't show right now, then he doesn't exist, means I win. That's all. That's why they do that one.
Seemingly win.
Yeah. So the whole idea is that he's understanding that there is nothing else other than that surrender to the Lord, right? So he's surrendering and taking shelter of the Lord. So therefore, it's the Lord who maintains. Otherwise, we think by my arrangement, everything's going on. I'm maintaining myself because I make the endeavor, I get the result. But here it's that, no, it's creation, maintenance, and destruction take place because of Krishna. We think, no, I made this arrangement. No, we didn't. Right? We got to take part. You desired it, God arranged it. You got to take part in the process. Like that. So now recognizing that it's Krishna. So therefore he's seeing that Krishna is the maintainer. There is the sole maintainer. There is no one else. Like that. Because the idea is that I'm the maintainer or someone that I know is the maintainer. But in actuality it's only Krishna is the maintainer. Right? So, but this has come about because the pride has dropped. Right? Pride being leveled means, you know, when you say something's been leveled means basically it doesn't exist. You know, there's nothing poking up, you know, like that. You know, it's completely, you know, flat. So here the ego, his pride is leveled, right? But important to note, it's not, there's no hole in the ground, right? You know. Yeah, that because otherwise then that will be the mode of ignorance, right? That I'm not the controller and enjoyer, that's just a fact, right? So that's why it's called false ego. But we're not talking about leaving you with no ego. No, we're talking about leaving you with real ego, right? So that I can't do anything, I'm useless, I'm this and that. No, that's not the point. No, you can do something, but what you're doing is only taking part as an instrument in what the Lord's doing. Right? Or the Lord's arranging. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, and most poor, it means that we're, not seeing things in connection with the Lord. You know? It means he's seeing this is the fact. But then, you know, that feeling that I'm not Krishna conscious, I'm not able to see all these things. But in any case, then Krishna is the. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Fourth principle of surrender. Avashya Rakshibe, Krishna, Vivasa, Palan. Faith in Krishna as protector. Song 3. Surrendering my soul unto you has lifted me from the burden of false pride. No longer will I try to provide for my own safety. I know that you will give protection to your treasured possessions, O Lord. I now understand the mentality of your treasured cow's safety maintained by your side. When you lead your herds to pasture, O Madhava, on the banks of the Jamuna River, you will call to them by softly playing on your flute. By slaying great demons such as Agasura and Bakasura, you always provide full protection. O Kana of the cowherd settlement. O Khan of the cowherd settlement. Khan here means master. Treat like you have Genghis Khan. You know, it's Khan means, that means that. Fearless and confident of your protection, I will drink the water of the Yamuna. The Kali is serpent's venom point him the Yamuna's rivers, yet that poison will be vanquished. You will purify the Yamuna, and by such heroic deeds enhance our faith. You will surely protect me by swallowing the forest fire. Thus you are called Gopal, protector of the cows, and Govinda, pleaser of the cows. In order to curb the malice of Indra, king of the demigods, you will protect me from his torrents of rain. O lifter of the mighty Govardhan Hill, when the four-headed Brahma abducts me along with your cowherd friends and calves, then also you will surely protect me, O Gokul Hari. Bhakti Vinoda is now the property of Gokula, your holy abode. O Keshava, kindly protect him with gentle, loving care. So, Krishna is a person, so what is important to him, what's dear to him, that he's going to take care of, right? Technically, the whole creation is his, and so he's taking care of everything, right? But the point is taking care in a way that's favorable means, how do you say, directly favorable. Then that is for those who are surrendered. For the others, he's taking care, fulfilling the desires that you want. Ultimately, it's for your benefit, because having fulfilled the desires, one is not satisfied. So then there'll be the element that one will eventually have to turn to the Lord. So ultimately it'll be beneficial. But in the immediate, then it's whatever's beneficial, right? So if beneficial is pleasant, then they'll be pleasant. If beneficial is not pleasant, then it will be not pleasant, right? Whatever is the arrangement Krishna will make. So whatever is dear, that will be taken care of in a direct way. Does that make sense? So here then, he's pointing out that the Krishna is taking care of the cows and making all these arrangements for them. Right? So then, surely he will take care of, you know, any other servant who is surrendered unto him. So that's the point being brought out here. He deals very nicely, he takes care, he protects. Even though there's some difficulty, that will be removed. You know, what is the difficulty of it? Then, that will be adjusted so it's favorable, right? So Krishna will always take care. Now in all these are all also all these different anarthas that are there. So one can look at it from the platform of being in the pastimes, right? Or being in the Sankirtan pastimes, meaning that one is doing service to the Lord, and within that it will be taken care of. But also in one's own sadhana, then all these different demons, they represent different anarthas, like that. And so that yes.
Maharaj, one can ask that Krishna is the protector of all the cows, but yet in this material world there's so many slaughterhouses and killings, and what is that?
But the point is it's going on in it's two different things. It means in Goloka, are the cows being taken care of or not? Right, because they're surrendered. Right? They are servants of Krishna. Right? Here, then, the problem is the cows being slaughtered are the cows that in the past were the slaughterers of cows. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean because they deserve it from a previous life that those who take part don't get implicated in the process. Does that make sense? Like that. Because it's not, how you say it? Yeah. On the universal level it's going on, but on the individual level, then, you know, they're not authorized. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, because this goes back. Means an animal that's killed not for sacrifice, right? Then for as many hairs as are on their body, you will be killed. Right? So a cow has a lot of hairs on their body. Right? Lots and lots of hairs. Like on our head, you know, a normal head, then there's about, you know, 100,000 hairs on average. Right? So that would be like a patch, like about that big on a cow. Right? You know what I'm saying? So you're talking about millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of lifetimes of being born as a cow and being killed. You know what I'm saying? So just taking involving in one, then you'll be involved in that process for a long time. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why these things go on. It's not good. It should stop. You know, in other words, if there's a need for that, then they can go to another universe and take part in it. But, you know, why in our arrangement it should be going on? Does that make sense? You know, because, you know, it'll go on somewhere, but the point is that those who understand, they don't take part, so therefore there's no need to manifest. Does that make sense? Because there's also cows to be protected. Right? So if you want to protect cows, then those cows will be there. And those cows that are supposed to get slaughtered, they'll end up at the slaughterhouse. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of what you want to take part in. You want to take part in assisting the Lord or opposing the Lord. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah, so here is the point is because he's surrendered, then he'll be protected. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is that also the point where it says you will, Bhaktivinoda now is the property of
Gosvami? Because it means if the point is we're not directly his property, we're the property of the place. You know, the paraphernalia goes with the place, like the furniture. You know, it's part of the house. Does that make sense? You know, so it's not that it's, you know, you and your sofa, you know. If you say to someone, you'll say, this is my house. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. It doesn't. If I ask you, you know, where do you live? You know, you say, oh, yeah, no, I have a house over here. You know, you won't say, I have a sofa over here. Right? Sofa is part of the house. Right? So, where Krishna lives, he takes care of that. So, anything connected with it. Right? Does that make sense? So, we're the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. So, we're there to assist in the arrangements. Right? So, arrangements are arrangements with the place. So, in that way, we're servant of the place. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But, he's interacting with the devotees. Like that. And so in that way, because we're making the arrangement, we're assisting the devotees. So in this way, then we're... Right? It keeps one humble. Otherwise, it's, you know, Krishna and me, you know. That kind of a thing. But it's not. Does that make sense? Like that. And we don't have the list otherwise, then we could... Because it means all these different... demons under the different kinds of, you know, false pride or pride of wealth, criticism of devotees, you know, attachment to sense gratification. So all the demons, they represent all these main anartas. So then you also have that of Krishna will protect. It means you are surrendered, therefore he can protect. But if you think we're going to do it ourselves, then it's kind of like, okay, go for it. You know. Yeah, then reading that pastime will remove that. Yeah, that's standard. But same time as generally, it's you know, we generally have a collection. So reading, you know, all the pastimes generally, then you know it's covered. Just in case there's one you're not aware of, you know, that means everybody else may be aware of it, but we're not aware. So therefore, might as well read them all so that you get the benefit. Okay. Song 4. I give up the vanity of the error that I am a male. Today I have become your faithful maidservant, Okana. In the groves of Raja, I will render personal service as a follower of one of the confidential Shakis, O Lord of Radha. I will string together a garland of forest flowers, in which Tulsi buds shall be the jeweled pendants. With utmost care, I will place the garland in the hands of my superior Shaki, and she will take it out of my hands with loving regard. Then she will place the garland around both of your necks, while from afar I watch and wonder. Daily you will string together, daily you will string together beautiful flower garlands that will enchant Radha and Krishna. The responsibility of your maintenance is mine. My cottage in this grove is yours. When the time comes for me to go and serve Radha and Madhava, you will stay close to me while remaining hidden. After dressing packets of betel nuts and fetching the camphor, you will hand them to me, knowing me to be your very own. Bhaktivinoda, having heard all these instructions, bows to the lotus feet of that confidential Saki. Okay. So, The principle of masculine doesn't mean specifically the body here, because we can see as he's not dealing on some other platform here. Masculine means the concept that I am independent of Krishna, right? That I am the controller, that I am the enjoyer. That's the masculine, or what's called the Purusha, the mood of the Purusha, mood of masculine mood. I'm the controller and enjoyer. So it doesn't matter if one's in a feminine form or a masculine form. The principle's the same. One thinks that I... Does that make sense? Of course. Someone with the masculine form will think and act in masculine way. And someone with the feminine, you know, form will act and think and act in the feminine way. No, they always will. Because the point is it's like even the, you know, the 18-year-old girl is getting onto her, you know, how you say, bobbed Harley, you know, with her tattoos and all the things like that. She still, it's still done in a feminine way. It's still a female doing it, the way they'll move, the way they'll act. Maybe a tough female, but it's still female.
How about homosexuals?
It's still the same thing. Right? It means the men will still think like men. One time I met, there was a couple, right? And they were both, one was in a sari, one was in a salwar, right? So both female clothes, you know, both had the hair. They're both, you know, in other words, both are ladies, right? But they're a couple. And how do you say? They're devotees, right? You know, so they're celibate, but they're a couple. Now, they had some questions, or at least one had. In other words, of the two, the one playing the masculine role in the two feminine relationship was asking the questions. Then I'm answering the questions, but, you know, there's some technical aspects of it. And then that lady was kind of, didn't quite catch it. Then the other lady said, no, I'll explain it to you later. Right? That whenever it came in, and they were fine with that. Right? Even though they were the lead, you know, the leading role in the relationship. So then, and this happened many times, at least three times or like that, they said, oh, I'll explain it to you later. Then, you know, once that was, then we're discussing. Then we find out is that that other lady who is saying that they will explain it was a hijra. Right? No, hijra means they're a man who converted into a woman. Right? So they still had the male brain of logic. Like that. But the fun part, they were in the submissive role to the female, you know what I'm saying? Because still, when you put the masculine and feminine together, the masculine has to be subservient to the feminine on the emotional platform. So it doesn't change. Nothing changes. You know what I'm saying? This idea that, oh, no, there's so many things. No, it doesn't change. Men will think like men, women will think like women.
Very good example.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, it's just like I remember in New York when I bought some Cheddars once. Went in and you go in and, you know, the garment district, you know. And so you go in and you deal with the cloth. And the guy who's dealing with the cloth, you know, he's gay. Like that, you know, so. But so expert in dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? Because it's cloth and they're all into this and, you know, they all talk and all this like the gay. But when they deal with the cloth, they're so expert. You know what I mean? Thick cloth like this. They just take it, cut it, and rip it. It's so confidently and so without anything going wrong. Like that. It's just so expert. The point is there's no mentalness. So that means that you can see the masculine element. But, you know, there's that feminine, that, you know, it's masculinely applied into a feminine field. But still the way of thinking is still, the thought pattern is still masculine. Does that make sense? That's the whole, you know. You know, you say, you take the car and, you know, I fill it up with kids and take them down to the nursery and, you know, we drive real slow or, you know, the grandmother with the, you know, the blue hair and all that drives it, you know, at 30 kilometers an hour down the highway, you know, like that. She never has an accident, but there's about 10 that happen around her because she's going so slow. Like that. You know, like that. So, but, or you take that and give that, you know, to the punk kid and he, you know, goes and drives it around like that or, you know, it's like that. But it may be acting seemingly, but it's still functions as a car. That car, what it can do is all it does. You can apply it in different fields. Right? So the male conditioning, you can apply it into, you know, the tough, rough, you know, out on the ship with his tattoo and, you know, all that kind of thing. Or you can, you know, apply it, you know, into some very refined environment. But it doesn't matter. Still, the way the brain works and is still that. The way the body moves. Right? The feminine is... You know what I'm saying? Because you'll say the man is effeminate. You don't say he's feminine. You know what I'm saying? Because when he walks, you can tell it's still masculine. You know, some of the arm movements are like that may not be. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that doesn't change. So we shouldn't be... So that's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about the Purusha Bhav, that I am the controller and enjoyer. So that applies to anybody. Right? So therefore, now he understands he's a faithful maidservant. Right? Because the point is one can be a maidservant, but one can be change the mood according to one's own desire, because then that means still that Purusha element is there. But if the fully surrendered element is that, no, one is completely surrendered. So one is faithful. One's not going anywhere. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, he'll render personal service, right, to one of his followers. Does that make sense? Like that. It means that he's not just serving he's trying to serve Krishna. And so, you know, there is a hierarchy for management. Okay, accept that. So we deal with it. No, it's personal. You're personally serving that person in the hierarchy. Yeah, it's parampara. That's what I'm saying. Nothing changes between the sadhaka and the, you know, means, in other words, between, what was it? Upaya bhakti and follow, and, upaya bhakti and follow bhakti. There's no change. It's in the principle. Detail may be different. Right? But the principle never changes. So, we're trying to perfect, come to the platform of prema, or once on the platform of prema, it doesn't change. The principle. That's why it's a principle. It's always there. Right? So then the different thing, he'll do some nice thing, but it says, with utmost care, I'll place the garland in the hands of the superior. Not that, okay, here it's done. No, it's care. And they'll take it with that consideration. Right? In other words, authority is respected, and authority deals very kindly. Right? This is the standard. So one could, does that make sense? So we see is that because the material, spiritual world, it's their serious management, right? That's why we never want to have management issues or authority issues. Because if you do, you won't like the spiritual world. You know, if you think it's managed here, over there it's even more. You know, you have 20 minutes to set up a pastime. You know, it's not like, you know, oh no, you know, you need 3 days to set it up. No, you have 20 minutes. So that means everybody has to do it perfectly. Know exactly what they're doing. Work perfectly as a team. Right? So there is no room for error. You know? And you're not talking about two or three people arranging something. If it's small, yes, but big, you're talking about thousands. You know what I'm saying? So that's the element. It has to be perfect. So this idea that we have authority issues, then those won't get you into the spiritual world. You'll have problems. You know? Yes.
Maharaj, is that a governing body system?
Learning body system.
Yeah. The governing body, as you speak about the management.
Governing body. Okay.
Is it unique only to Goloka Vrindavan?
Governing body is that concept. No, means as a means you have the principles always the senior Vaishnavas. You know, you're always going to have a group of senior Vaishnavas. But the aspect of the seniority being more directly involved, that may be more unique. But there's always the senior devotees. You know what I'm saying? There's someone in charge, but there's always the senior personalities, right, for advice and all this and that. So here is that advice is there, but they're also individually very dynamic in seeing that it all gets done. So in other words, what you're having is a group of persons who they themselves individually have responsibility, right? Then they are cooperating together, right? It's not an administration. It's a cooperation, right? And so that then becomes the top. In other words, you don't have an individual on the top. You know what I'm saying? So, but at the same time is that they're serving the mood of someone who is higher. You know what I'm saying? So you have this combination. So that the element comes up is that it's just like in the Vedic culture, the Brahmins are the head of society, but they're not the ones who manage society. The Kshatriyas manage society. You know what I'm saying? So the administrators are Kshatriyas. Right, that, or you could say, you know, the manager of Kshatriyas, not the Brahmins. But because the Brahmins are the authority of the managers, that makes the Brahmins the supreme managerial authority. Not the supreme managers. There's a difference. There's a difference between being the authority of the managers and being whoever is the top of the managers. There's two different things. Does that make sense? You know. So, you know, it's just like the army. The army has its generals who manage the army, right? And that may be under the president or prime minister. But the president or prime minister does not manage the army. You know what I'm saying? They simply are saying, you know, what is seeing that the mood is proper and that they're engaged in the appropriate way. But as far as the direct management and all that, that's never done by the ministers and all that. It's just, it doesn't happen. Not at least in anything that works. You know what I'm saying? If it's done by that person, then we call it, you know, a dictatorship or something else, right? So that's the whole point, is that cooperation is what makes it unique, in that they are the authorities of authority, but they're not the ones who directly do the management. Does that make sense? But it's a Brahminical concept, so we don't expect it to be understood by the bourgeois culture, which is Vaishyas who think they're Kshatriyas. But most of the time, because they do it from the bureaucratic standpoint, they're actually Shudras. They're Shudras. They're dwijas who have taken up the Shudra mentality, but their field is money, but to control the money you need power. Does that make sense? So that's the modern position. But GBC is a whole different entity. That's coming from the spiritual concept, that you have all these persons that have a responsibility to see that the standards are there, but they cooperate together. Right, so it's not a managerial, how you say, managerial system as such. You know, you don't consider the Brahmins a managerial system. No, they are part of the managerial system, meaning that because the Brahmins are there, then the managerial system of the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, that stays in order. It stays in control. Does that make sense? You know, I mean, that's Varnashram. That's just the way it works. So that system, that's used, what we see in the spiritual world also. Does that make sense? Because here you have Vishnu's on the top in Vaikuntha, and it's obvious. He's the boss, right? You know, and then there's Lakshmi, you know, Vishwakshena, you know, Garuda, like this. So it's very obvious, very formal hierarchy. But in Vrindavan, you don't see, in Goloka, you don't really see that. You know? Right? So in Vrindavan, then the principle is that Krishna, even though he's the top, but he's subservient to his devotees. So the whole point is rasa, the tasting of the relationship, that's the topmost point. Because the relationship is the intimacy, not the formality. If it's formality, then he needs to be the top. But if there's that intimacy is there, then that's not, it's whatever makes that relationship work. Therefore, Krishna, though he's seen, he's submissive to the devotees. Does that make sense? So, just like the Brahmins, they're under the protection of the kings, right? And as far as law and all that goes, then that's being regulated by the kings. But that the kings have the proper understanding and proper training and knowledge, you know, and standards, that's regulated by the Brahmins. You know what I'm saying? So, the actual, you know, understanding and standards, that's given by the Brahmins and controlled by them, but the application of it, that's done by the Kshatriya. Right? Does that make sense? So, we see that's what makes it different, you know? Does that make sense?
Managing the money. Yes.
Managing the money. It means whoever's the administrator, he manages the money. Because he has to get it, so he has to manage it.
There is an idea that if you are doing like some Brahminical activities, then you are not supposed to get money and we will manage it for you.
No, but the point is what does that mean by Brahminical activity? Yeah, but preaching is not within the realm of the Kshatriyas, so it's outside of their area, so how would they manage it? Deity worship's outside their area, how would they manage it? Doing yajnas and skamskars is outside. Management, housewives do management. That's the thing. Management's overrated. See, this point that I'm making is understandable by administrators and Brahmins, not by managers. The guy on the factory floor who manages the floor is a Shudra. The guy driving the taxi and managing that it doesn't fall apart is a Shudra. Management simply means you successfully deal with the manipulation of the material energy to get the result desired. That's all management is. But that's not what we're talking about. Kshatriyas means administration. That's a whole different ball game. Those who can't tell the difference between management and administration will fail as administrators. So this idea is that Brahmins don't... So if that's the case, then all classes, anything spiritual, can only be done by the Brahmins. And no one else should do them either. And what about the point of that the Brahmins advise and direct the Kshatriyas? That's not brought into the equation. Because nobody cares about that. All that's cared about is men and money. That's all. So all they're looking at is the Kshatriya and Vaishya thing. But without the Brahmins, so that makes them Shudras. So the point is it's very annoying when someone thinking they're acting as a Kshatriya, but they're acting as a Shudra, and then says all these stupid things. What do you mean they can't manage money? The money, when Parasaram conquered the world from the Kshatriyas, who did he give it to? The Brahmins. They're the only qualified ones to manage the world. Because the problem is it's the Kshatriyas that want to control everything and completely forget what's going on. Your problem is not the Brahmins. Your problem is your Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Does that make sense? So the point is we don't pick out of the Vedic culture what parts we want because they are favorable for us to control and enjoy. We have to take the whole package. That's what we were saying. Is responsibility goes with rights. You have rights, but you have responsibility. No, it's they're supposed to make sure that you have money. They don't manage, no king manages a Brahmin's money. The Brahmin's money is sacrosanct. They can't touch it. You know, if they say it's temple, then you manage it. But then if you're going to manage the money, make sure that all the people are there and they do everything. So in other words, the Brahmin comes in and just does his puja, or he, you know, goes out and distributes his book. Let the temple president make sure that there's books in the book bag and that the truck has, you know, the bus has, you know, petrol in it and this and that. If he's not going to do that, why would he manage the money?
Yeah,
What's the problem with money? Money's opulence. Money's Lakshmi. Brahmins are good with Lakshmi. It's the Kshatriyas that have the problem with Lakshmi. Let's get it straight here. Who has the problem? That's what we were saying before, is that fault-finding means you take your own fault and put that on the other person. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes.
Is there a connection between management and ethics, administration and morals, and leadership and dharma?
Morals and ethics technically are the same. Dharma is the higher principle. Means you could take morals to be higher than ethics, but they're interchangeable. Means the difficulty has come in the modern context, they don't know what is dharma, and they don't know what is religion. So what sub-religion becomes religion, right? In other words, you go out in the forest and you had, you know, you suddenly, you forget about all your, you know, money and family and social troubles, and for that moment, you appreciate the peacefulness and harmony of the forest, right? So there's every chance that the person will consider that a spiritual experience. All it was is he bumped into the mode of goodness, you know. So it wasn't spiritual. It was just that was good quality material. Spiritual, something else. So the problem is most people can't tell the difference between dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. They can't tell the difference. Like liberation, generally we can figure out sense gratification, but dharma and artha, that's like, you know, rocket science to most people. You know, so dharma means what is the inherent nature. You have to work according to that, right? Artha is you're getting the results, right? The technique in artha then is niti. Niti means simply what actually gets, what mechanics get the result, right? It's like we're saying here, is like, let's say you have business. You buy it cheap, you sell it more expensive, right? Okay, that's the ethics, right? Now the point of dharma is, should the Brahmin be doing that? Not recommended. Should the Vaishya be doing that? That's recommended. That's the difference. So we don't make a distinction. So when we use this, that's the problem on using these modern methods of success, is they don't distinguish between what's dharma and what's niti. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is, the sense niti is subservient to dharma in this expansion of dharma, because from dharma comes artha.
Yeah.
Right? Without dharma, there is no artha. So the point is only someone who's dharma can successfully and consistently or sustainably deal with artha and not have a problem.
But it would seem that we have a lot of, in the modern world, some conception of dharma abused in order to get niti or artha.
Dharma abused to get niti.
I mean, you have your politicians saying it's for the, yeah, for the but, country or...
No, but being for the country, that's still pranamoy. That's still ethics. It's for the country, but dharma means what's the inherent. You're saying it's for the country, but define country. You know, define citizen. Define, those aren't defined. So all it is it's being said for profit. Not that it's not correct as far as dharma goes, but you don't classify it as dharma if the person doesn't understand it as such. You know what I'm saying? The person picks up the rock and drops it and it does something like that. You say he's clumsy, but the physicist will say that's Newtonian's law. Why? Because he sees that. You understand? So dharma, you can only call it dharma if someone knows what dharma is. So the person who's dharmic, he can look at it from that viewpoint, but the person who's not, he can't claim it's that. Does that make sense? That's the point. Right? So in here, then, these considerations are being, how do you say, brought fully in line with service to the Lord, that I am fully surrendered to my authorities. And they are, because you belong to Krishna, they are taking care of you with the utmost care. And because the authority represents Krishna, you deal with them with the utmost care. So that's the point. Krishna consciousness makes everything work perfectly. Even if you don't know all the rules of Dharma and Artha and Niti like that, you can still socially function perfectly, because if you have respect for authority and they have care for those who are their dependents, it will always work. Even if you don't know what you're doing today, you'll figure it out. Right? If you're smart, if you have the nature to do it, you'll figure it out. You don't have the nature, then you'll figure out where you belong. But the problem is if there is, if these the elements aren't there, because one may say, yes, but we, since it's not there, then we have to deal with it in this way. No, you can't, you don't, you solve a disease by medicine. Right? Does that make sense? You don't get rid of a cold by introducing a fever. You know what I'm saying? You get rid of a cold by introducing medicine for a cold. Right? Or you don't have, cold medicine works for everything. So if you have a cold, then you get cold medicine. You have a stomach ache, cold medicine. You know, you have a rash, cold medicine. You know, you have a fever, cold medicine. Like that. That's you know, your norm, that's bureaucracy. They have a rule, it applies to everywhere. You understand? So the point is authority has to be there. It has to be in control. But at the same time, it has to know what it's doing and be follow the etiquette. So the problem is not that there's authority. The problem is the etiquette's not being followed. If you take it, well, no one can follow the etiquette, then that means then, you know, you're accepting that, you know, in the previous point that was being made, that until you kind of basically move beyond these lower qualities, then you only come up to the human platform, and then you can follow Varnashram. So if you're taking that uncivilized, you know, human form is our basis of social interaction. You know, in other words, animal life is our basis. So then we'll develop there. But even if you want to do that, it's not, it can't be speculative. Because God made animals, so if you want to do, then act according to them. You know, then pick, you know, what are you going to do? Okay, you want a management scheme. You have to pick something that there is some management, right? So some ants, some bees, you know, a pride of lions, you know, a group of monkeys, something that has a social interaction and there's a hierarchy. You know, then, so you still, it won't work outside of that. Right? But you'll find it nicer to use the human form as opposed to the animals. Right? So the point is here is that Krishna will protect, because the you are serving him through authority, and through authority he will protect. So if you're surrendered, it will work. If you have your own purpose, you won't be able to appreciate that. Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of you can do whatever you want like that. It's a matter of the only solution is following God's law. That's all. So that's the point. He's surrendered. Therefore, Krishna will protect. You're not surrendered. How will Krishna protect? And as mentioned before, you know, happiness and distress is that we don't define what the protection is. The kid wants to go out and play and all that, and they have a really bad cold, and mother said you have to stay inside, you know, sit next to the fire, you know, read your comic books or whatever it is, and this and that. He doesn't want to do it. So then when he thinks he can, he runs outside. So the mom goes outside, grabs him, and pulls him back inside. So to the kid, that's a very unpleasant and unfair situation. But is it? No. So that's the point. You have faith in Krishna. Krishna is taking care. We may appreciate it or not, but that's not the point. Does this make sense? Okay, and here. He does his service. He remains hidden. He's not trying to get the credit for it. Right? He's rendering service, offering the, because they're also not trying to get the credit for it. They're simply trying to serve Radha and Krishna. Right? That's the principle. So daily responsibility is yours means you take care, you do the service, and they'll take care. That's the whole point. Take care doesn't mean I'll take care of your money. Like that. Take care means take care of everything. Okay? It's interesting. It doesn't matter what the topic. I mean, that means it doesn't matter what the medium of the topic. We'll always come back to, you know, money and politics. And, you know, no, but it's all right to be a grihastha and, you know, engage, you know, like that. You know, so it's you know, the questions, when we get into these kind of things, or it gets into touches on the pastimes, it's just like, you know, it gets that neutral state again. And until someone asks something that kind of catches a little something, and then, okay, now we got it. And then all the questions start. You know, yeah. So that's why these will be. We're discussing. That's why it's not a problem if things are discussed at various levels, because you only take from it that. You know what I'm saying? So here, you know, within the first degree, then we're taking from it on the dealings of karma, a combination of karma yoga, jnana, buddhi yoga is what we're using. So we're going to take even that, in, like here. So that's why I was saying the serious study of it is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita level, because then we'll be able to appreciate what's going on in the pastime. Okay, fifth principle of surrender. Bhakti pratikul bhava varjana angikar. Renunciation of conduct unfavorable to pure devotion. Song 1. We have a few more songs for this one. O Keshava, this material creation of yours is most strange. I have roamed throughout the forest of this universe in consequence of my selfish acts, and I have beheld many curious sights. Forgetfulness of your lotus feet, which is bitter suffering unto death, burns me with its scorching pain. In this helpless condition, my would-be saviors, the sage philosophers, Kapila, Gotama, Karada, Jaimini, and Buddha, have come running to my aid. Each expounds his particular view, dangling various pleasures and liberation as bait in their philosophical traps. But all of them are just bogus cheaters, being averse to your devotional service, and are therefore a source of fatal danger. Every one of them are cunning experts of karma, jnana, yoga, and tapa, who provide various kinds of tempting bait for cheating the souls who are averse to you. Having paid his respects to these cheating philosophers from afar, Bhakti Vinod takes refuge at the feet of your devotees as the essence of his life. Right, so here he's pointing out the material world is most strange. It's not that it's just strange. It's strange is that everyone's doing everything for themselves. It's not connected to the Lord. Everything is the Lord, but no one's connecting anything to the Lord. Right? It'd be like you have 20 people in a, you know, this 5-star restaurant kitchen, and none of them are cooking. You know? They're all, you know, using the utensils there for something. Like that, you know, that one guy's doing his electrical work, so, you know, he turns on the stove and all that, you know, and melts the things to, you know, the insulation to get it just right, or, you know, somebody's using or using it to do the soldering, you know, stuff like that, or, you know, it's cold, so you turn on the oven, open the door, you know, sit there, and, you know, like that, stuff like that. And, you know, so like this, they're all doing something, you know, over there, you know, using, you know, the spoon to, you know, as a screwdriver, you know, it's like that. So if you went in, you would say, this is most strange. Because what it's actually meant for, it's not being used for. So the material world is meant to engage one's conditioning in the service of the Lord, but it's not being done. So it's very strange, right? So one moves throughout the universe because of the consequence of his selfish acts. What you do for yourself, that's how you position yourself, position, how you'll be positioned for your future identity of self. Right? How you act now is what will be your situation later. Right? So in this, then one is, you know, seeing many curious sights, you know, like that. So it's whatever's there in the world. Like what is the idea? It means you have the Discovery Channel. What's the whole point about Discovery Channel? You know, it should be some blasé, boring thing that's just every day. Yes, it'd be something new, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing. It's curious. It's something unique, something different, you know. Everybody else, all the other animals, they walk with their legs down and walk like that. The sloth hangs upside down, walks in the same way, but upside down, you know, sleeps that way also. You know, so that's curious. So that's the whole point, is that you're going to discuss the varieties, the material. It's something curious. Right? You know, it's just like, we'll discuss about, you know, there's those bugs that, where you have a fissure in the bottom of the ocean floor. And so the direct, you know, lava is exposed to the ocean. So the temperature there is, you know, up like 600 degrees. Like that. So there are living entities that when it gets to that temperature, then they are very active, you know, they multiply, everything like that. If it drops a few degrees, they stop. You know, so it has to be like, it has to be boiling hot water, then they're happy. We'll discuss that. But we're not talking about, you know, some lizard sitting out in the sun in 50 degree weather somewhere. You know, does that make sense? So it has to, you know, we're looking at what's curious. You understand? But the point is everywhere you go, it's curious. You know, the lizard is sitting there, and one eye can look one direction, the other eye can look another direction. And they can process all that. They can see both, all these different directions at once, no problem. You know, or the other bug, he has, you know, 1,000 eyes, you know, so then he has these 1,000 images, you know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, there's that artwork where you take it and you put so many things like that, and they think that's something new. No, that's what bugs see. Right? You know, it's just, so it's bug art, you know, it's like that, bug art, right? You know, so, like that. So that's all it is, you know. If you do it in black and white, you know, that's what some animals see. You do it in color, that's what some others see. You know, so that's the point, is the material world is, it's unlimitedly, you know, unique things, you know, like that. So, because he's forgotten the lotus feet of the Lord, therefore he's suffering so much. Right? And so by remembering, that's when the suffering stops. Right? Because the actual suffering is ignorance. That's the real point of suffering. Right? So now, because of this, then all these philosophers, these sage philosophers, then they come. Kapila, Gotama, Karnada, Jaimini, Buddha, they've all come running to help. Right? So they bring in their, Gotama brings his nyaya, his logic, right? Karnada brings his, you know, atomic theory, like that. Jaimini is bringing in his karma mimamsa. Kapila is bringing in his analyzation, you know, his shankhya, like that. Buddha is his, you know, freedom from all this, don't get involved. So they're all bringing in their ideas that, by following this, then you'll be saved from the material entanglement. But none of them can save. They can just keep you. In other words, you have become disturbed or lost your enthusiasm in dealing in the material world. So all these philosophers can do is give you hope that you can enjoy yourself. You know, if not here, by giving it up, you'll enjoy there by being liberated. Or if you deal with it in a pious way, then you'll be happy. Or if you simply analyze it, then you'll be happy. Or if you simply use logic, you'll be happy. Does that make sense? So East expounds this particular view, dangling various pleasures and liberation as bait in their philosophical traps. So all of them are giving some mundane aspect. Because spiritual only means what's connected to the Lord. Anything else is just not spiritual. So that's the element's focus. It's not that it's not logical. It's not that it's not analytical. It's not that there's not a mechanics that works here. But the point is, it's still bogus because it doesn't connect you to the Lord, which is the actual only solution, right? Their idea, why? By following it, you'll be happy. But the soul can't be happy doing anything else other than devotional service. That's the bogusness. Does that make sense? You know, it's mechanically it works. You follow Gotama, and your thinking will be logical. Right? But that because you think logically, now you've solved all the problems of the soul, that's bogus. Right? That the universe is made up of atoms and how they come together and all, that's true. But the point is by understanding that, that will make this solve the problems of the soul. That's bogus. Right? That you analyze the universe into the 24 elements and understand how they interrelate, but by knowing that, then you solve the problems of the soul. That's bogus. Right? But it is true. That's how it's made and that's how it functions. Right? The mind is expanding from the, created from the mode of goodness, the intelligence. That's true. But by knowing that only, without knowing the Lord, or his connection with the Lord, it's still bogus. Right? But if you're logical, connected to the Lord, you understand the atomic theory, all that in connection with the Lord, then it's all part of the Vedanta philosophy. But when you take away the Vedanta element and just left with the mechanics, then it's one of these six bogus philosophies. Does that make sense? Right? Because devotional service is not what's being focused upon. Right? Otherwise, they would call it devotional service. Right? But it's not. It's called something else. Yes?
Is it this philosophy are completely devoid of devotional service, or they are some indirect way to come to devotional service?
Are they an indirect way to come to devotional service? Means you can be exposed to the environment, but any pious thing is something that's progressive. Krishna says there's only one path. Right? So if one's pious, then one's moving towards Krishna. If one's impious, one's moving away. Right? That's all. But the point is how far you'll get on the path. You know what I'm saying? It's not very dynamic. I turn around and I walk one or two steps. Then I stay there a while. Then I turn around again and walk a few steps back the other way. And so it's just, you know, that's the living entity. Now and again, he walks a little farther, you know, gets up to the heavenly planets, and then comes back, or gets up to the Brahman, and then comes back, or goes to hell, and then comes back. You know what I'm saying? So it's God's law, so it's all his path. But it only becomes understood as his path when you understand it in relation to devotion. Does that make sense? It means you elevate yourself to the heavenly planets by doing what? Dharma, yes. Sacrifice, right? Your sacrifice means voluntarily giving up the results of the work. Right? Like that. So that's what elevates to the heavenly planets. What makes it fruitive? Right? It's naishkarmya. What makes it fruitive? Yeah, you want the result. Having elevated, you give up the result of the action done, but you don't give up the result that action will produce. Right? And then if you're giving up, you're following the position of naishkarmya, and then that elevates you to liberation. Right? Same naishkarmya, same sacrifice. But here, it's liberation because you want to enjoy the position. You understand?
But is it real naishkarmya then?
No, it's not. But I'm saying that still the principle they're using is naishkarmya. And devotional service is give the result to Krishna. It's naishkarmya. You understand? So if you want to move forward, you have to follow naishkarmya. Right? I engage in my own senses. I stay where I am. I see that other senses are pleased. That means I've given up something to see that they're pleased. Right? But I'm still, my happiness is coming from seeing them pleased. You know, I'm not just going to give it up and not experience the pleasure coming from seeing their pleasure. Does that make sense? Right? If I can't confirm that they're happy, I don't want to be involved. Right? Does that make sense? So the principle, so if there's an element of renunciation there, or of, you know, giving up the result of an activity, then it moves you forward. And you don't do that, it moves you backwards. So that's the law of this road. But the point is how means how much you're not giving it up is how far you go towards hell. And how much you're giving it up is how far you move forward towards Krishna. But only when that giving it up is for Krishna's pleasure, then it becomes devotion that will take you all the way to Krishna. But that's just the rules, how it works. There isn't some other laws that you can, you know, implement to make it work. No, they're already set. It's already God's laws. Does that make sense? So these great personalities, then they are presenting what will move you forward. But the point is unless you have the association of devotees, it won't turn into devotional service. That's all. It means devotional service comes from devotees. It doesn't come from somewhere else. So karma gyan will not produce bhakti. Right? But it may produce a favorable environment, but just because the environment is favorable, that does not create the devotion. It can't be that I'm in distress, so therefore I surrender to the Lord, so the distress caused my surrender to the Lord. No. You're distressed, you took shelter of, you thought of the Lord, therefore by Krishna's great, Him being pleased, that sense of surrender and knowledge and detachment then came. You know, it's like what we said. The soul left, then there was the heart attack. Is that make sense? Is that okay?
The level of authorities. You're talking about the great souls who are given these six darshans. Then there's the acharyas,
Levels of authority means the great sages are respected because they're great Brahmins and great authorities in their areas of scripture, but the devotees are more of an authority than that. Right? Because the actual purpose of authority is to accept God's authority. Right? You know, as a person and interrelate with Him on that platform. Right? Does that make sense? So it's superior authority. You know what I'm saying? Someone's representing the city. They're an authority, but someone who's representing the district or the county, that's more of an authority. Someone who represents the state is more than that. Someone who represents the country, that's more than that. Or a region and the country. Right? Does that make sense? Then you have the little guys with 3 foot tall and pinstripe suits in Zurich, right? Gnomes are 3 foot tall, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's connected to the Lord, that's when it becomes actually dynamic. That's the superior authority. Otherwise, they have authority over anything else. When it comes to knowledge and that, they'll have greater authority than, let's say, a modern academic or scientist. Like that. They have greater authority than that because they're basing it on the Vedic version. Does that make sense? So much of what they're talking about, the facts are correct. The problem is their conclusion of applying those facts, you know, or the actual facts of the nature of the soul and their relationship to the Lord and the Lord, that's where they make a problem. But the mechanics that they're talking about, those are real mechanics. You follow Jaimini, you do elevate yourself to the heavenly planets and that. It mechanically works. You know what I'm saying? These others, by following it, you can merge yourself into the Brahman. It mechanically works. The problem is that they're missing the point of all that's supposed to be to please the Lord. So they're unable to bring it to the point of the Vaishnavacharyas. That's why Vedanta is higher, because it acknowledges the Lord's position. Right? But then of that, then the Vaishnava understanding, that's the proper. Is that something? Okay, so now he's offering respects, but from a distance. So in other words, they're Vedic authorities. We respect them, but we're not going to get involved with them. Right? That's also something you find in the Vedic. You can still respect somebody for the position, though you don't get involved with them personally. Does that make sense? It's the two different things. It means you may not like the boss, but he is the boss. So as a person, you don't get too involved, you know, with him. But he is the boss. You do what he says. Does that make sense? So in this way, you can have these two elements. Someone who combines those two won't work for the boss because he doesn't like him as a person. So he gets fired. Right? He doesn't do well. You have to make the distinction. So here, we respect them for their authority in the Vedas. But the point is that we don't have anything to do with them, because their purpose of applying the Veda is for something other than God consciousness. Like that. So, you know, there's nothing there for us to gain. Does that make sense?
It applies to all Vaishnavas, I suppose.
It means it's all Vaishnavas. So it means Vaishnavas then, you know, have the proper understanding of Vedanta. Then within Vaishnavas, then you have the different schools. So you have five schools of Vedanta. It means the sixth is there, but that's Shankara. Yeah. So that's not counted in that. Is that?
Yeah. It's the four sampradayas. You said five schools.
Five means you have, you know, Madhvas, Ramanuja, Nimbarka, and Vishnuswamis. Commentaries, you know, then Vishnuswamis, you know, most likely will be Vallabhacharyas, that line. But then you have Govinda Bhashya, Baladev, the Chintavedavita Tattva. So they're giving Dwait, Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, and Dwaita Dwait. And we're giving a Chintavedavita Tattva, which includes all of those points, but harmonized. Right? They're not opposing doctrines. So he just takes shelter at the lotus feet of the devotees, because there's nothing else that's worthwhile. Song 2. I will assuredly abandon with utmost endeavor all things in which aversion to your devotional service is inherent, right? Because you're giving up what's unfavorable to pure devotional service. So all these other philosophies, they're unfavorable. So the philosophies are given up here. I will not keep company with those opposed to your devotional service, nor even look at the faces of those inimical towards Lord Gauranga. I will never reside in a place unfavorable for devotional practices, and I will never take pleasure in non-devotional activities. I will read no book opposed to pure devotion, nor listen to any scriptural explanation which counters pure devotional principles. I will never regard as sacred any place where Lord Gauranga is rejected. All knowledge or action hindering pure devotional service I consider worthless. Any seasonal observance which poses obstacles to the execution of devotional service finds no favor with me. And I consider as strangers all my own relatives or family members who are averse to devotional service. I will totally abandon all desires that hinder devotion, and I will never touch foodstuffs offered to me by non-devotees. I vow to carefully avoid whatever I know to be contrary to devotional service. This is a most definite proclamation. Bhaktivinoda falls down at the feet of the Lord and begs for the strength to give up all things that are unfavorable to pure devotion. Right? So this is his determination. It's not connected to Krishna. He's not interested. If it's connected to Krishna, then it's interesting. That's the basically point, you know. And so, just to make sure that we understand that, then he gives all these, all the company of persons, even their close family, if they're inimical to devotional service, you know, then they'll be strangers. But it doesn't mean you're not nice to strangers, right? But it doesn't mean that you'll be close with them or intimate with them. Like that. Whatever's activities that's not devotional, books that are not devotional, any place that's not you know, favorable to devotion. So anything like that will be given up.
Yes. This could be confused as being sectarian.
No, it's just what's not favorable to the Lord. So that means if the same place, if it's favorable, you'll be there. If the same place is not favorable, you won't. It's nothing to do with the particular... It's not to do with that they're a relative. It's not to do with the place. It's not to do with the book. It's not to do with the activity. It's whether it's connected to the Lord or not. So that's not sectarian. It means anybody who claims to be God-conscious would follow the same principle.
I would say that people who are not God-conscious would say that that's sectarian.
But you could also say that their saying is sectarian. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because the point is, why would it be sectarian if you're talking about God being the universal principle? So everything you deal with is connected to God. That's pretty universal. So therefore, that which will enhance my understanding or practice of that, I will put myself in those situations, and that which doesn't. So we're talking about universal here. Sectarian is where you're comfortable to deal with it, but it's a specific, you know, local element.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Devotees eat what?
Prasadam.
Does it matter what cuisine it is?
No, we
call it prasad, right? Yeah. Doesn't matter the cuisine, okay? So if the kid asks what's for dinner, it's prasad, right? Like that, no?
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's not offered to the Lord, then you will name it by its particular cuisine.
I've heard armies say that, well, I'm God-conscious in my own way. Why does it have to be? You have all these rituals.
So yeah, and I'll be nice to you in my own way. And so in my piety, you know, it's like that. It's, you know, we come up and, you know, make faces like that. You know, do all this and like that. I'm doing my own way. Why you're complaining? Why is it that you're working in this sectarian way that, you know, I have to come up and be pleasant and nice and say, hi, how are you? Like that, because I don't feel that way. You know, this is the feelings of that I'm just expressing. So, you know what I'm saying? That's the point, is that, well, I want to do it in my own way. So but you want to do it in your own way. Does God have to accept that? And he says, you're saying I should accept that. I can accept that or not. The point is you're trying to get God's attention. Why should he accept that? You know what I'm saying? So the point is it doesn't work. Right? It's the point, if you want to be God conscious and attract God's attention, then you have to do something that God would be impressed by. Is that what it means? Because otherwise, if you do what you want to do whimsically, it doesn't work, right? Van Gogh wanted to get the attention of a particular girl, right?
Did
it work?
I don't know. I'm sure she heard about it.
I mean, she heard about it. That with him hearing about it is just he should hear about it, you know,
yeah.
Or should be favorable.
Yeah.
Was it favorable?
No.
No. Why? Because he whimsically did something in his own way. You know, he felt like it. So that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Is it doesn't necessarily work. Yeah.
So basically, that's the answer, that we have evidence that our process works.
Means we find it works. Yes.
Yeah.
Means everybody who's tried it correctly gets the result.
Yeah, exactly. For thousands of years, without exception.
Yes. So it's just it works. You follow, it works. You don't follow, it doesn't work. So that's all. So why speculate? It means God gives religion. So why speculate and make up your own? Song 2. Oh, no, we're on song 2. Any okay. No, we went through this. So seasonal observances, you know, it's like that. So whatever happens to be, if it's not conducive to devotional service, it's not involved, right? You know, like that. So in other words, going to how you say Stonehenge, you know, for distributing books, then that's favorable. If you're going there because it's the solstice and all that, then you got a problem. So I vow carefully to avoid whatever I know to be contrary to devotional service. What I don't know, you know, that's another thing. But what I'm associated with devotees, what I've learned and trained, what I know, I'll avoid that. So that's the point. Right? And with utmost endeavor, right? He makes it like that. That's the, so now we've gotten knowledge, we've gotten activities. Right? Song 3. One who is intoxicated by worldly affairs of sense gratification, as well as one who subscribes to impersonal philosophy, both maintain their lives uselessly, for they are devoid of devotion to you. I pray at your lotus feet, O Lord, that I may be spared the company of these two kinds of people. Yet, of the two, the association of a worldly man is better. I never covet the company of a Mayavadi. Right? Because the Mayavadi means that everything is God and he's a person, then the Mayavadi is opposed to the important element, right, that he's a person, right? Now, the Karmi, he's not opposed to persons and interacting and being happy in that interaction. He just doesn't understand the all-pervading element and doesn't necessarily connect it to God, but the principle is there. Because the Mayavadi, okay, God is everything, I'm not engaged in sinful activity. Okay, great. Then you're established in a position of purity. But now taking up devotional service means God's a person, and we're going to engage the senses that they can't do. That's their whole philosophy, is that you don't do that. Right? So as soon as they drop that aspect of the philosophy, what's their situation? They would be back to the position of the karma. Right? Does that make sense? So to advance, they would have to accept that the Lord is a person, and the senses being engaged on that personal level are valuable. But he's left that. So he'd have to go back to that. So that's why the karmi would be better. Right? He's already said, may I be spared the company of both of these kind of persons. But of the two, better a worldly minded. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you know, you may dislike dogs, so you would not like to be in the company of dogs. But if you had to be in the company of dogs, you know, probably better a, you know, dachshund than a Rottweiler or a pit bull. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Maybe we should make it more extreme. A corgi and a pit bull, right? So a little more cuddly. Or even more. What's that Chinese one with all the wrinkles on it? No. The chow chow. No, all they are is just wrinkles. There's just so much wrinkles. They're just, you know, even though they're big, they look like a little cute little pudgy dog, right? You know, so. What did you say? Chow chow. Yeah, chow chow or pit bull. Right, so, like that. So, all it is saying is you don't like either of them, but of the two, the materialist, at least he accepts the personal element and the engagement of the senses. So now you just have to convince him of the supreme person, and therefore the supreme engagement of the senses. So it's not actually so difficult for him. Like that. The other one will be very advanced in the way of not being attached to things and very pious like that, philosophically inclined, but as far as engaging in the devotional process, they'll have great difficulty. Right, the karmi won't be so detached, but the personal process and all that he'll accept.
But again, the Mayavadi is also very attached to his knowledge.
He's attached to his knowledge. He's attached to that he alone is the authority, like that. Because even they have a guru, eventually you become the guru, like that. So we see from that previous song there, it's not going to work. In the spiritual world, you have authorities eternally. Right? You know, so it's just one of those things to get used to. Yeah. Is that something? When by chance the hearts of worldly persons come into contact with your saintly devotees, they easily attain devotion by the mercy of the devotees. But the heart which is penetrated by the offensive influence of impersonal philosophy becomes hard as a thunderbolt by degraded sophistry. Right? So the karmi, by the mercy of the devotees, then they can take up the devotional process. Because their hearts are soft. Right? You know, maybe, you know, mushlessly useless, but soft. Right? But the Mayavadi, it's as hard as a thunderbolt. You know, and it appears to be very sophisticated. And all, so there's no way you're going to convince them. They won't want to take part in all these unsophisticated elements. It can be. It has a lot of, because also it's a sophistry is a philosophy like that, where it's very technically developed. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it becomes used as sophisticated, because generally those who have that kind of mentality, then they'll apply that detail into their lifestyle. So how they dress or act or talk will be sophisticated, but it actually means what's before that, their view. Like that.
Is it from the Sufis or the Sufis?
Not from the Sufis, it's from the Sophists. They were all these, you know, like your professionals in the Greek culture. Like that. And so their ideas just, vox populi is what defines truth. What everybody likes to do, that's what's real. So we have to be very careful. We're thinking that it's the new modern thing, or postmodern, or post-postmodern, or, you know, post-post-postmodern, or however far you want to take it, that this is the new thing that you do, what, you know, and your others are working together. It's a cooperation. No, this is like a 3,000-year-old philosophy. Like that. And it's Greek at that, you know. So if you like olives, you know, then, you know, go for it. But if you don't, then...
I think we all know how Greek is doing.
Yes, it's not doing so well. Like that. The Mayavadi declares that the true form of bhakti, its object, Sri Krishna, and its possessor, the devotee, are all transitory and thus illusory. Right? It means, in other words, you have the devotee, you have Krishna, and you have the process that connects the two. Right? So you're Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So he's saying all that's illusory. So you use it as a transitory thing to get to the stage of understanding the Brahman. But the point is what they miss is that Brahman understanding is simply Sambandha. It's Sambandha Jnana. You know, the soul is Brahman, Krishna is the supreme Brahman, the material energy is Brahman. So yeah, we'll say the same thing. Everything's Brahman. But we can distinguish between Brahman while they can't. They're not intelligent enough. You understand? So it's only Sambandha. So because he's the supreme Brahman and we're Brahman, so that's the natural relationship. Right? So therefore, what's the process by which we, as the superior, in the subordinate Brahman, can serve the superior Brahman? So it still stays in place, even within their concept of philosophy. Even on the Brahman platform, it still stays in place. But they're unable to see this, so therefore, we actually doubt that they're real Brahmavadis. Right? That's why they're called Mayavadis, because it's all illusion. Because a Brahmavadi wouldn't have a problem. They wouldn't know about it, so they would at first doubt it. But it's not that they couldn't understand it. But a Mayavadi can never understand it, because everything's illusion.
I'll just say one thing that somebody said, you know, what is it?
A little louder.
Prabhupada said one time that somebody said to Prabhupada, you know, but isn't that just, you know, Hindu myth? You know, Prabhupada said, you know, it's like everything is myth, simply you are truth, you know, like that.
What do you mean, Hindu myth meaning?
Somebody said something about like one pastime or something.
Oh, isn't that Hindu myth? Yes, yes. Everything's myth.
It's like everything is myth, simply you are truth.
Yes. Because that's the thinking. Whatever they, in other words, what you understand or are favorable to, that's good, and what you don't understand or aren't favorable to, then that's not good. So that's the whole point. You're giving up that which is unfavorable, means that which is not connected to Krishna. The point is not what's not connected to us, right? Favorable is what I appreciate, right? So either by the intelligence, through understanding, through emotions, through feeling, right? You know, through the senses, that is pleasurable. Then that I will say is favorable. Anything that's not good for my senses, my intelligence doesn't, you know, accept, the mind doesn't appreciate, then I will say is unfavorable, right? So it's the same point, is that it's all about yourself. We'll say, no, there's a broader truth. No, it's not. It's all about yourself. So we'll probably, by saying that, he'll stop the argument. Because the person will have to look at it and says, yeah, it's all about himself. Right? So we're switching it that it's all about Krishna. Right? So the intellectually, those things that are favorable to Krishna, therefore philosophies and studies and all that. For the mind, those relationships and interactions, you know, the senses, those engagements. So whatever is favorable to Krishna, that will be done. Anything else is given up. Yes. The possessor. It's object and possessor. Because in here, then you're putting, you are performing the service towards Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So, in other words, the devotee performs devotional service. Who's it for? It's for Krishna. So since he's in the position of object, the object is where the result ends up. So that means the result is for Krishna. Does that make sense? Means the devotee possesses bhakti. So you can also say here ashray and vishay. Right? Like that. But possessor means he possesses that particular bhakti. That then is directed towards Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's in when you're dealing within the relationship, that's how it would be seen. Does that make sense? But if you're looking at tattva, then we're not the we are the ashray, but he's the vishwar, he's the enjoyer. Right? So in that case the enjoyer is the doer of the activity. Right? And the object is who the activity is directed at. So Krishna performs activities directed at the devotee. So when we take part in devotional service, that we are not saying that Krishna directs it at us. He's directing it at Radharani. We're taking part in the devotional service, which is assisting in that exchange between Radha and Krishna. So then it puts us in the position of the instrument. You know what I'm saying? But as far as here is that the devotee possesses that devotion towards the Lord. So the possessor means of the devotee. Right? The Mayavad goes that the true form of bhakti, right? So the point is bhakti. Right? Its object, Krishna, means bhakti's object and the bhakti's possessor, the devotee. So the devotee possesses bhakti. Right? And through that, then you control Krishna. But that, because that devotion is directed towards Krishna. So using it in a particular way here. Does that make sense? Fie on his pretense of so-called service to Krishna. Fie on his pretense of engaging in so-called hearing and chanting of Krishna's glories. His recitation of prayers strikes the body of Krishna with blows more cruel than thunderbolts. There's no philosophy in the world as antagonistic to devotional service as the impersonal Mayavad philosophy, right? So impersonal Mayavad. Not that there's a personal Mayavad. Like that. Or we're meaning of impersonal philosophies, Mayavadi. Because the impersonal philosophy, that's only acknowledging a portion of Krishna. That means, you know, it means the Brahman aspect. But it's not that they're averse to Paramatma and Bhagavan. They just don't know about. Well, the Mayavadi, he knows, but he's averse. So therefore, that's why it's the worst. There's nothing more antagonistic. Therefore, I do not ever desire the association of the Maya body. Right? So he's made the point here is that when by chance the hearts of worldly persons come into contact with the saintly devotees, they easily attain devotion by the mercy of the Lord. Right? But the Mayavadis don't, because their heart is so hard. It's the most dangerous and it's the most antagonistic of all the philosophies. That's why I said philosophical deviation is worse than sensual. Right? Because the philosophical makes the hard heart. Makes the heart hard. Yes. Make sense? Bhaktivinoda drives away the philosophy of impersonalism and sits safely in the society of Vaishnavas under the shelter of your holy name. Right? So therefore one can say all one wants, but better to be in the association of the Vaishnavas, no matter what the situation, than to not be in the association of Vaishnavas. Song 4. Oh, I am a resident of Swananda Sukhada Kunj. And a maidservant of the lotus feet of Radha and Madhava. I happily rejoice at the union of the divine couple, and in their separations I die in utter anguish. I never look at the Aryan Vraj called Shakistali, where Chandrabali and her friends live. If I were to see that place, it reminds me of Chandrabali's sharp-tongued gopi friend named Shaibya. I feel pain in my heart whenever I happen to catch sight of Chandrabali's proud girlfriends, for they are all inimical to Radha's camp. Chandrabali wants to take away Radha's Lord Hari, thus causing the love grove of Radhika to be overcast with the darkness of gloom. I never look at the faces of those who wish to obstruct the joy of the union of Sri Radha and Govinda, nor do I find any pleasure in conversing with those who are members of a camp opposed to Radha. Bhaktivinoda has entrusted his soul with great care unto the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. Any questions? Fun, isn't it? You know, the previous one, you know, you can take it word by word and pull it apart. This one is just, yeah, very nice, sweet, nice.
Mark, I have a question.
Now,
in the Chandrabali camp, is that the mentality of the gopis, is that in the place where they see themselves as servants of Krishna, but there's also that prominence of that Krishna belongs to them? They want to be directly with Krishna?
What's the point? No, the point is that they serve Krishna without serving Radharani. Right? So his point is if this is giving up what's unfavorable, means we give up the idea that we're going to serve Krishna in any way outside of what is favorable towards Srimati Radharani. In other words, our line is serving Srimati Radharani. Lord Chaitanya's taken the mood of Radharani, Rupa Goswami, as his servant is therefore giving that line in what is favorable towards serving Krishna as a servant of Radharani. So that's the idea of being, we want to be Krishna's maidservant. No, we don't want to be Krishna's maidservant. We want to be Radha's maidservant. You know, so it's serving Krishna in the mood of the gopis, that's fine, but it's only interesting, it's only favorable if it's in line with serving under Srimati Radharani. If it's not, it's not favorable. Like that. So just the thing of, you know, the gopi bhav and all, that doesn't have any value. It has to be in connection with Krishna, otherwise it's of no use. It has no meaning. So here, in other words, the place where activities are not in support of Radharani, right? It's just like before, you know, but now it's taking the set. The place that's not favorable, those involved, you know, the leaders of that, you know, anything like that is not favorable. Yes.
Why in the Tulsi prayers do we sing, please give me the privilege of your own devotional, make me your own maid servant, and give me the privilege of your devotional service? Why do we ask to be the maid servant of Tulsi if all souls have different scopes? Why are we praying?
What do you mean by Shuru?
Siddhateha.
And what do you mean by Siddhateha?
Eternal identity, spiritual identity.
And then that identity you're going to work under who? Because we've already established you're going to work under somebody. Does Krishna accept anything offered to him that doesn't have a tulsi leaf on it?
Nothing.
Okay, so then, and if the cowherd boys were dressing Krishna, would they put tulsi on his feet? I mean, sandalwood definitely, tulsi probably. Or tulsi, definitely, in sandalwood if he got it. Right? So that means that Vrinda is part of the service of Krishna. See? Does that make sense? Because you're taking it by the external. So yeah. The point is here, Bhakti Vinod is in a male form, but he's giving up that concept that he's masculine. So he's still, as the head of the family, as that man in the family, doing all his duties. Like that. So, by looking at him, it's still, but he is, as the maidservant means, maidservant means that you're a completely surrendered servant. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Right? Does that make sense? Manservant has some independence. Maidservant won't. You know what I'm saying? You know, the girl's not out on the street. It doesn't matter if she's a maidservant or not. But the man could be out on the street, whether he's the master or the manservant. So that means there's more element of surrender in maidservant. Does that make sense? Yes.
Yeah, it is explained that in Braja there is a place called Sakistani, that's where he is living. So it's indicated that even in Braja and Aram, not everyone is following the step of Adam, serving Adam.
No. Means it's like this. After being on different parts of the Mayapur project, then you'll walk into, you know, within the project, then you have an area where you live. And with that area, then you will go to a particular apartment. Does that make sense? So then you'll consider, you know, your apartment, where you walk, what you do at the temple, what you do at different places in the Mayapur project, that's your world, right? Like that. So there may be so many other things there, but that doesn't matter to you. Does that make sense? So Braj, there's so many devotees are rendering service, but for us, the world is just what's connected between Radha and Krishna. Does that make sense? So there may be other places where other devotees render their particular service, but if it's not favorable to, you know, Radharani's service, then it's not considered of value. The point is what does Krishna's perspective have to do with you? You can only see things from your perspective. Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of from Krishna's perspective. It's a matter of from our perspective. If you want to pull it into tattva, then the point is the Sarup Shakti is Krishna as Swayam, in his Swayam form, is interacting with his internal potency. I mean, with his potency as a Sarup Shakti. So that's actually all there is. So Krishna is everything, Radharani is everything. There is only Radha and Krishna. There isn't anything else. and Radha and Krishna are non-different. Does that make sense? But as Krishna expands, Radharani expands. The point is if Parakya Rasa is more intense than Swakya, then how would you have Parakya if there's no rivals? Right? So that means it is service to Radharani's service to Krishna for there to be, you know, camps that aren't connected with. Does that make sense? And, you know, for there to be Jatila and Kotila and all these kind of things. It's their service is to create the environment to make it more rare and more special to be together. But the point is we're not involved with those. That's not our interest. That's their business. It's none of our business. Our business is how they can be together. You know, we don't sit back and go, oh, by touch, it's all this. No, it's what you, how you interact. So our world is just centered around Radha and Krishna. It is the world, but the point is to make that world have the flavor it does to so many other aspects. That makes sense? Yes. Why would you care? He mentions it just so that you're clear what is there. Chandravali is there. She has her associates. So the place where she stays, the place of, in other words, the place of her service, her, herself, her associates, that we're not inclined, we're not interested. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So it's not just some intellectual thing. Oh, he's mentioned it. So he's mentioned it so you know what not to do. He also mentions back here Mayavadis. He spends in this whole thing of song 3 about the Mayavadis and the materialists like that and the devotees. He spends most of the time talking about the Mayavadis, but that's so that we avoid. And it's not because he's talked about it. Oh, now so then the Mayavadis are, you know, good to go. You know, here. Does that make sense?
Know about
her. Yeah, we know about her, so?
It's a difference between avoiding and having knowledge about its existence.
No, having knowledge is that you know the facts. Avoiding is what you personally do. So we know there's a Chandravali. When you get there, they'll point her out to you. So you know what she looks like. You need to know more than that?
I just wanted to know if there are Vaishnavas now.
They're Vaishnavas, they're great devotees. But the point is they have nothing to do with us. There's a different mood. If you noticed here, today I become your faithful maidservant. I mentioned the word faithful. That's the point. We're only in that line. So we're not interested in anything else. You know what I'm saying? If you value, this is why jnana is not favorable to devotional service. Because it's simply because it's something that intellectually you could discuss and follow down a road somewhere, then we consider it of value. But there's no value in it. You know what I'm saying? You don't know the details about, you know, Vishaka or Rati Manjari. And that doesn't seem to have any importance because it didn't come up. So there's no desire. This only comes up because intellectually the word was mentioned, the name was mentioned, so therefore it's something that we could, you know, go after. So therefore that's why it's on the platform of jnana. It's not on the platform of the mood. Because the mood, it's like, you know, it's not, they're not mentioned. And if you think, well, that's wrong, they're also devotees, then you got a long way to go. Because there is such a thing, we are people. And we have loyalties. And that's how pastimes work. Nobody wants somebody who is not loyal. Does this make any sense? Or kind of. Okay, well then you'd use different facial expressions. You know, the kind of... That's one is that, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I'm talking about some other more broad and intellectual and more liberal thing. No, you're not. You're talking about something that you don't need to talk about. You know, it's like the 10-year-old finding the Playboy magazine. And he's told not to talk to, you know, like, no, but he knows that there's something, and something good for him. There's nothing there useful for him. You know what I'm saying? So that's why probably I should have been satisfied that there aren't many of these songs in here. And that nobody had any questions. Because when there are questions, they're useless. You understand? The point is she is a devotee, and her service is to create the rivalry. And we're in Radharani's camp, and so we don't care for those who create the rivalry. Does that make sense? Point is it either makes sense or it doesn't. If it makes sense, great. If it doesn't make sense, then be very careful about the false ego being harbored in cultivation of the intellectual position that, you know, there's something more to be gained and I'm not exactly addressing it. Because the acharyas... I'm shocked, actually, that he mentioned her name four times. Normally, it wouldn't even be mentioned once. But it's mentioned because so that you will be very clear who is being talked about. Otherwise, the maxim they generally mention is the place. That's all. So it's much more subtle. So I'm surprised you mentioned so many times. That's just so it's very clear. But we have respects for them. We respect them from a, you know, we have respect. They're great Vaishnavas. But we don't interact with them. Does that make sense? Okay, so then tomorrow will be the... No, tomorrow?
Monday.
Today's Friday.
Yeah.
Somehow, in other words, Thursday, I think it's Friday. When it's Friday, I think it's Thursday. So. Something's.
I thought Wednesday was Sunday.
Wednesday was Sunday?
There's no class. And class the next day, so... I always think Wednesday is Sunday.
Oh. You ever think Sunday's Wednesday?
No, because then there's class with you in the temple, so I always remember that Sunday's Sunday.
I see. Somehow Sunday's Sunday, but Wednesday's Sunday.
Wednesday's also Sunday. I don't know. Yeah, two Sundays in a week. It's nice.
Yeah, if it was... Yeah.
Is there, you mentioned in different times are good to do things according to Manu. 4 to 6, do those things that you do in the morning, do the Sabbath in the morning, like that. Are there different dharmas for different days?
Different dharmas for different days.
Yes.
It just means certain days work, like Wednesday. Wednesday especially is good for getting things done. Something like that. Tuesday is good for fights. Mondays, you know, can tend to be a bit mental.
I've heard Saturday is good for Nisina-related prayers.
Yeah, that's there. But I'm just saying, they have their prominence, but it's not that it means for doing service in every day is good for anything. Did we say? Pretty close. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.